This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's shaping the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic podcast about sports produced by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined by my co-host, by my partner in crime, Marcus Vanderberg. What's going on, Marcus?
What is up, man?
I am feeling good. It's the holiday season. Christmas is past. New Year's is ahead of us. Enjoying Kwanzaa right now. I think everybody...
You don't stop. Right, you don't celebrate Kwanzaa.
I really don't, but as somebody, one of us had to say...
Hey, here, listen up. White people, listen up. We don't celebrate Kwanzaa. It's all bullshit.
Oh, man. Why do you keep insisting on trying to drive Christopher away from the podcast, man? Chris in L.A., you know he celebrate Kwanzaa, man.
He's like the only one.
And Ronnie in Houston.
Ronnie doesn't celebrate Kwanzaa.
Maybe to get white girls.
Nah. No one who eats on the air celebrates Kwanzaa. That's just bad form. That includes G-Wash, too. He doesn't celebrate Kwanzaa either.
Oh, man. You'll put G-Wash out there like that?
Yeah, I can do that.
Oh, man. Well, shout out to G-Wash. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. But I think everybody right now, Marcus, is feeling good. Everybody outside of Dallas. We just got through watching the thrilling Cowboys-Eagles game. And Kyle Orton did his best Tony Romo impression and choked the game away in the final minutes of that contest, and Philly is going to the playoffs, and the Cowboys will be sitting in a multi-million-dollar stadium with a big giant screen watching the playoffs just like everyone else. So
for the third straight year.
Yeah. It's not all bad, though. Marvin Lewis is going to the playoffs.
Where he's still – what's his record in the playoffs? Winless? 0-4?
Hey,
all right.
Hey, why you always got to try to bring people down, man?
Well, facts? Yeah, I'm sorry.
First Kwanzaa, now Marvin Lewis. I'm sorry, black community. Marcus is killing your sacred cows right now. But, yeah, it's been a cool weekend. I had a chance to go down to Carolina and then visit my sister and her husband and my nieces and my brand new niece, Maya Faith, is 2 weeks old, and it was really cool. The coolest thing, though, was laying on the couch on Saturday night watching the UFC through my cable provider, Nefarious Means, who does stretch to North Carolina, and I watched UFC 168. So before we get into the show and the best of, the greatest hits, if you will, of the year, let's talk about what happened this past weekend and one of the weirdest, quirkiest finishes you'll ever see to a fight. And perhaps, Marcus, the last time we see Spider-Man in the UFC cage.
Not only that, not only one of the weirdest finishes you'll see in a fight, just a weird card overall. I was at the MGM Grand. This is my first UFC event. And it was just a lot of weird things. I mean, you had the Silver Whiteman fight we'll talk about in a second. You had Rousey completing her heel turn. You had this part of the fight went viral from the prelims. You had the John Howard fart. Did you catch that fart?
No, I have not seen that, man.
If you search UFC fart, it'll come up, and it was audible ringside yesterday. So. someone let one rip during the middle of the fight. And then after the fight, we had the whole Dustin Poirier interview where he said that during the weigh-ins on Friday, Diego Brandão threatened to stab him in the neck. So it was... And on top of that, we had, after the fight, when Ronda Rousey was announced to co-headline UFC 170, to the point where Dana White had the poster already made. So that shows you what faith they had in Miesha Tate. So it was just a weird, weird night overall.
Yeah, man. I enjoyed the card. I mean, I expected, you know, last week we predicted Ronda Rousey would win, and of course I did Crazy Chicks, but you got to give props to Miesha Tate. I mean, you know, that first armbar submission that she was able to escape from, I got to give her props on that. But, you know, Ronda is a beast, and she's probably the best heel the UFC has seen since Chael Sonnen, because she can talk and she can back it up in the ring, and I look forward to seeing what they have in store for her, because really, I mean, I watched all of this past season of Ultimate Fighter. Ain't none of them bras in the house can step up to Ronda.
No.
None of them. And so I think, you know, we'll see long reign from Ronda Rousey. I am intrigued, though. Chris Cyborg was already tweeting, looking for that fight.
Yeah, well, until she passes the drug test in the UFC, then I don't want to hear from Chris Cyborg about her challenging Ronda Rousey.
Hey, you speak with respect in your voice when you talk about that man.
Don't. She'll find you.
Hey, it's the last show of the year, man. That's how we do. But let's get to your main event with your boy, Chris Weidman, against Anderson the Spider Silva, one of the all-time greats in MMA. And I was hyped for this fight. And, you know, Anderson came out to DMX, and Chris Weidman came out to the White Boy Anthem.
Tom Petty.
I won't back down. No, I won't back down. And got in some great shots in the first round, and he looked like he had Anderson gone. But Anderson, you know, to his credit, was able to recover on the ground from his back and put up some defense. But then, man, if you have not seen this, folks, while you're on the internet Googling UFC fart, like Marcus just alluded to, check out this kick, man, because I saw it on my computer, on my laptop. And my niece, my six-year-old niece, was in the room while I was watching UFC. And she looked at me and she said, "Uncle Nate, what's wrong with that man's foot?" And I said, "Bri, it's time to go to bed, because you don't need to be seeing none of this." Like, I've never seen, I know Joe Rogan alluded to a previous injury like that, but for me, I've never seen an injury like that in the UFC ring, especially with the caliber of fighter of Anderson Silva. And it's like, it was a weird way to end the fight. But also, you know, like I alluded to, man, if this is the end of the Spider's career, it's a sad way to go out.
Yeah, it's a very sad way. And the fighter that Rogan was talking about was Corey Hill. And Rogan was calling this fight. This was, UFC 86? No. This was a few years back. But a similar injury happened where this dude's leg snapped in the ring. It took him 13 months to come back from the injury. The big difference between Corey Hill and Anderson Silva, besides talent, was age. You know, Corey Hill, he's currently 35, but at the time he was, I believe, in his early 30s, and Anderson Silva is now 38. You know, if you figure he needs a complete year at least to come back from this broken leg, broken fibula and tibula, that's pushing him at 39, 40. I just don't see it. And I think, unfortunately, I saw, and we all saw, the end of Anderson Silva last night.
Yeah, I mean, I hope not. I mean, you know, if it was the end, you know, you can't take anything away from this dude's career, one of the all-time greats. But I hope he comes back at least for one fight, you know, to, you know, end his career on a good note. Maybe Usher can get back in there and give him some coaching. Come on, Spider. You just got to let it burn right now, baby. And Anderson be like, how long will it take to heal? That's like, 2 minutes, 14 hours, 2 minutes. Oh, I know man. I used the same joke 2 weeks in a row, but
yeah, that's it's not, a holiday. Come on, come on.
Hey.
Keep it fresh.
No, no. This is the best of show. We're not keeping it fresh. Everything is recycled. You're getting all leftovers on this show.
Except, this opening, except this opening segment's fresh.
Yeah. This opening segment is fresh. Everything else is that leftover pecan pie in the refrigerator right now, 7 days after Christmas. But speaking of leftovers, Brother Marcus, one of the things I really like about this show is the chemistry between yourself and me and Brother Alfred. And we've had a lot of interesting conversations this year, especially when it comes to list topics. I know you mentioned your favorite sports movie this year.
It's as a classic.
A classic. I mean, it's definitely a classic. I mean, it's now you're playing with power. We also talked about sports movies. We talked about athletes singing. And this is probably the only reason, if you haven't listened to every show we've done this year, this is probably the best reason. I won't say the only reason, but the best reason to download this here podcast, which you've already done if you're listening to it. You will find the origin story of Marcus's nickname. It's like Spider-Man had an origin. Incredible Hulk had an origin. Iron Man had an origin. Batman had an origin. Marcus the Unicorn Vandenberg had an origin as well. And you will hear it on this very show.
Go Laces.
So right now we're going to play some of the greatest moments, the best moments of the year between Marcus Alfred and myself. And we'll be back right after this on the Kings of Sport.
Yeah, another prediction from the prophet.
Yeah, we'll see about this one.
We will see. Remember, the prophet is, and you record this, you keep this on ice.
The funniest thing to me about this whole win streak, though, was like the little things. Like this past weekend, we saw Dwayne interview LeBron, and then Chris Bosh is kind of like the little brother that wanted to play with the big brothers, and he just being silly in the background. Like, for some reason, Chris Bosh is just a great player, but for some reason, he's just like the most awkward superstar ever.
Awkward's a nice word to describe him. I have other words to describe him, but I won't go there.
Like every time Bosh shows up in the background, it's like, awkward.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Chris. Oh, that sounds cool. I actually have to get going right now, but yeah, just call me later and we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Oh, Chris Bosh, I'll tell you. But, I mean, I kind of agree with Marcus, though. I think that this is going to be something that keeps rolling. I do think that they will surpass 33 consecutive wins. And, again, like I said last week, this is the team to beat in the NBA. So everybody else, you know, you got your measuring stick. LeBron's going to walk away with another MVP this year. So, you know, you got your work cut out for you. But staying in Miami, somebody has gotten a makeover, and it is not the best. The Miami Dolphins planning to unveil a new mascot. Have you guys had a chance to look at this?
Unfortunately, yes.
I have.
What do you think about it, Marcus?
It's not impressive. That's for sure. It's as someone who went to a high school who had the mascot of a unicorn, I really can't talk about other mascots because
Time out. Your mascot in high school was a unicorn.
The Laces Unicorns, yes. It wasn't like an upset unicorn. It was like a white and blue unicorn. So I really can't be talking about anyone else's mascot based on my high school's mascot.
I think, I think the show shut down right now. That's a wrap. We can't go any further than the unicorn mascot, my Little Pony Tech.
Pretty much.
One hell of a baton team.
Needless to say, we weren't known for our athletics. We didn't have a football team. We barely had a basketball team. So.
I was going to say, was the team name like the Fighting Unicorns?
No, there was no fighting involved in our basketball team.
The only thing they're fighting is bullying.
I will say, though, Lace is home to Mila Kunis. So laugh all you want, but we had Mila at one point.
Touche. Oh.
Nah. The Dolphins, it's just ridiculous. It's like a corporation, you know? It's the Miami Dolphins, Inc. What happened to the over-the-top mascot, you know?
Yeah, this is, like, so streamlined and corporate, and I'm like, fuck, Anthony, did you have something to do with this? Like, doesn't he own, like, 2% of the team?
He owns a fork in one of the restaurants, yes.
Him and Gloria Stefan and Will Smith and all those celebrities, and this is the best logo you could come up with for your team.
You know what it reminds me of? Remember the game Echo the Dolphin on Sega Genesis?
Yeah.
It reminds me of Echo the Dolphin. Wow. Wow. They found a copy of Sega Genesis lying around and said, hey, let's just steal this.
Echo the Dolphin. Echo the Dolphin was probably tougher than this mascot. Yeah,
that was one of the worst games I've ever played on Sega.
What? You didn't like Echo the Dolphin?
I hated Echo the Dolphin. I didn't see a dolphin as a hero type. I just didn't. Maybe it was just me, but I could not stand that game. I didn't get it. You know, after Sega, and I grew up with Mario and Sonic, which was Sega. I know Mario was Nintendo. It's just Sonic versus Mario. It's like, where does Echo the Dolphin fit into this conversation?
It was a hard game, I'll tell you that. I never beat it, but it was interesting.
The thing about it, though, it was trying to teach you something, right? It was because, like, it's something environmental, and Echo was trying to fight, what was it, extraterrestrial invaders who were going to harm the environment?
I did like the environment theme. I like that.
Okay, I'm going to throw something out for you right now. Like I said, this show has kind of been thrown off the tracks ever since the unicorn was brought up. But did you guys ever play on the PC? I know I'm a little bit older than you guys, but we had like Carmen Sandiego and
Or
Trail. Did you ever play a game called Odell Lake?
No.
I think I did.
Odell Lake was off the chain because you could pick, like, you could be a little fish, you could be like a guppy or minnow, and the whole objective of the game was you had to survive and also eat the other animals. Like, you would be running from a shark or running from a sea otter, and then you had to eat plankton and other little smaller fish. And then every now and then a fisherman would try to catch you with his rod and his reel.
So they're teaching Darwinism, survival of the fittest? And that's in school?
Pretty much.
I guarantee you that's not in the South. That's not in the Bible Belt. Darwinism, man. You can't
It was in Virginia, the Oakdale Lake.
Wow, Odell Lake. It sounds so familiar. Now, I played the Oregon Trail. I remember that. And Mario Teaches Typing was a fun game growing up playing in school. That really taught me how to type because, you know, you type the buttons and Mario hits the blocks. It's a really creative way to get kids to learn how to type.
But,
you
know, I was just thinking. Speak in there.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, you know, I'm Big Nasty Cuddle, right? Alfred Big Nasty Cuddle. Nate is the godfather. We still have yet to come up with a nickname for Marcus. What about the unicorn?
No.
Hashtag unicorn.
Wow.
I try to share a few guys' stuff, and look, you're trying to turn this around on me.
We're here with the fighting unicorn, Marcus Vandenberg. Wow. He's like, this is what friends do. This is what brothers do.
I know.
That's what friends are for, man.
Am I my brother's keeper?
Go Aces.
Oh, well, that's the mascot, but that was great. I'm going to keep this for forever. I'm just one segment, and whenever I'm feeling sad, I'll just go back and listen to the fighting unicorns. But I'm going to turn the tables to Brother Alfred. What is your list?
Well, I really do like that list, Brother Nate, but I think mine might be a little bit better. Because we're going to start with Carl Lewis. Can we get off Carl Lewis's back? I know he butchered the national anthem, but the guy actually can sing. He didn't go the rap route like a lot of athletes do because they think they can get rich quick just making up these lyrics. He actually tried to put a little bit of talent into his game and sing, and he doesn't have that bad of a voice. He had the song, of course, Break It Up, which carries a tone of harmony and everybody working together on a team. He says, let's all work together. You can't win on your own. No. Make up your mind. Join in while you still can. I mean, it's beautiful, and it's coming from a guy who specialized in an individual sport as an individual Olympian who wins gold medals for himself. But no, he is still concerned with the team effort. You gotta love that, Brother Nate.
First of all, I think you'd listen to that song quite a few times to get that tone in there right there. I did have a chance to I remember the song, but I don't like I've forgotten about it. So when you told me about it, I went and looked it up on YouTube, and the song's actually pretty good. And Carl actually can hold a tune as opposed to what we saw when he did the national anthem. But the video, The video was something else. It's Carl lifting weights in a gym with all these white women. And it's very, I mean, you know, people say Carl is kind of suspect, but Carl said, hey, I'm going to show you. I got all these white women. I'm going to lift some weights and I'm going to sing my happy song with the Calypso beat. So I think it's a fun song. It's a happy song. And, you know, I wouldn't listen to it on repeat on my iPod, but every now and then I mean, I'm the guy that listens to, I forget the artist, but we don't have to take our clothes off to have a good time. I still like that song, man.
Now, he was working out in the gym with all these white women, and it sounds so masculine and manly, lifting weights, and he got all these women. He couldn't have made it look more effeminate. You know? He got the tight little spandex and all that, and he's a little dude, too.
Sorry, what are you trying to say about Carl?
I'm not trying to say anything. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
So why are you trying to hit Carl with that Hollywood Simpson, man? Don't do it. Don't do it. What'd you think about that song, Marcus?
Carl, I mean, he's lost me. After the anthem will always be my first and only thought of Carl Lewis as a singer. But I will say Alfred did a great job singing. He probably sung better than Carl Lewis did.
Oh, I don't think that's a compliment.
It is. It's a compliment.
Okay, good. But I was working on that. But let's go into number two. My man, John Cena, for the second week in a row, he makes one of my lists. And I will try to find an excuse to put him on every single list we do because he just doesn't get the respect he deserves. Time is up. My time is now. His anthem, what he comes out to. And what I love about this song is it's got wrestling influences tied into it very cleverly as well as hip-hop to where he goes, in case you forgot or fell off, I'm still hot, knock your shell off. My money stacked fat, plus I can't turn the swell off. The franchise doing big business, I live this. It's automatic, I witness. Oh, you hear those horns? You're finished. As a three count. He even says to lay your ass down for a three-second tan because he's a wrestler, and that's what wrestlers do. They got to give you that three-second tan, baby. And that album he came out with the trademark where he had bumpy knuckles on it really wasn't half bad. I thought that he did carry a tune quite well when it comes to rapping. And the number two song on my list, John Cena. Marcus, I know you're not the biggest John Cena fan in the world, but please give this man his props.
You know how many times you've probably heard this song in the last 8 years or so? Can you imagine? If you figured you watch Raw once a week, plus pay-per-views, times eight. You've probably heard this song 400 times. I am so sick of this goddamn song. It's time for a new theme song for John Cena.
That might be less than maybe like a number one hit single that gets played on the radio 400 times, maybe even a week.
No, it's every week. Without, I mean, please, America, please, WWE, Tim Johnson, new song, please.
No, do you think they should bring back Basic Thuganomics?
I would enjoy that.
Yeah, that's Basic Thuganomics is a good song. I don't know how much it fits this character, but I gotta disagree with Marcus. I know this song is played out, but in terms of wrestling themes and as far as wrestling themes, I actually like it. You know, starting off the top at the very beginning, you got the Rabatu, which everybody who's a hip hop head knows. John Cena, I don't know if he borrowed it or if he stole it he stole it from MOP's Annie Up.
Exactly.
Which is a great song and a hype song. And then the rest of the song, it's not the same as Annie Up, but it still has that kind of vibe. And, you know, Cena's flow on the track is decent. It's solid. You know, it's not great, but it's not terrible by any stretch. And, you know, the kind of effectiveness of any song is that you connect it immediately. When you hear the first notes in the arena, you know who's coming out. And, you know, the Road Warriors had that. Ric Flair had that. You know, Undertaker has that. And I think John Cena's song is right there with those guys. So, you know, I kind of like the song. It's not my favorite, but, you know, it doesn't – I don't hate it.
Good, good. That's more than a lot of people say about John Cena. So let's go into Shaq Diesel, who has to close out this list. I think he is the – trailblazer, even though he was a Laker and then, you know, and a Magic and then a Heat. He is a trailblazer when it comes to an athlete who goes into hip hop, because not a lot of athletes can say this. Shaq went platinum after that first album, and then he came out with the Shaq Fu album. Now, he had that game Shaq Fu, which I played as a child, and Shaq being Fu. Into games like Vector Man, like Sega Genesis and Sonic, like even Echo Super Mario, Echo the Dolphin, is you guys love so much and me not so much. Shaq Fu really wasn't on par with those games. It was actually a very terrible game.
But every Shaq Fu game came with that single, Shaq Diesel, make him shake, make him shiver, as he take notes as I stand and deliver. Stand and Deliver was a great song by Shaq. You want to talk about flow, putting it together. Shaq came off as a rapper in this song. If I would have heard this song on the radio and Googled him and said, who is this? I would have been shocked to find out that there's an athlete out there who knows how to rap like Shaq does. So shout out to Shaquille O'Neal. You guys can't deny, I think this is the greatest Shaq song of all time in terms of just pure talent.
I don't know about that, because to me, I'd say in terms of Shaq songs, because first of all, I hadn't heard this song before, but my favorite Shaq songs will probably be You Can't Stop the Rain with Biggie Smalls. We would probably be No Hook with the Wu-Tang Clan. And the other Shaq song will probably be I'm Outstanding. And of course, I always like Phil as my father because my biological didn't bother. That's a good song because I posted it on the Kings of Sport Facebook page, facebook.com/Kings of Sport. He's got this one line where he's talking about 2 months ago, see my biological pop on the Ricky Lake show. What do you want, Dad? You might think it's funny what people do for money. And though I know it's a serious song and it means something to Shaq, the way he says that line kills me every time. So I like that song. But getting back to Stand and Deliver, I listened to it today, and you're right. You know, at the beginning of the song, I couldn't even really tell it was Shaq because his voice was a little different. The flow was a little bit different. The beat was good, and you know, Shaq stayed on the track. And it's not my favorite Shaq song. I still like the ones I mentioned before a little bit better. But it's a good song.
I'm a man eater. Do I look like Hall & Oates? No. You get it? You see what he did there?
I see what he did there. Yeah.
Marcus, do you see what he did there?
You know what I'm waiting for is for the Inside the NBA crew to bring out these rap songs. They haven't really got out Shaq in his rap career yet. It's probably the only thing left that they haven't attacked him for. So I'm waiting for Charles to just bust out the Shaq Diesel album one day on the show and sort of go in on him.
He could do a remix with Birdman, Birdman.
Birdman, Birdman.
King James, King James. Kenny's, yes, side note, Shaq and Kenny be killing me. Inside the NBA is like the best reality show on TV, in my opinion.
It's the best TV show on the network.
The producers make it really good because they love stirring shit, so they always put in these tweets like, Shaq doesn't like Jalen Rose. So sometimes they put in a tweet by Jalen Rose, and they got Shaq's reaction, and you can see he's legitimately mad. He's like, I don't even know who that is. I don't know who that is.
Well, getting back to Shaq and his singing, I'm surprised that nobody has brought up Shaq, maybe Shaq's greatest hit, his freestyle, Kobe has my ass taste.
Oh. He said that. Shots fired.
Hashtag shots fired.
That is his greatest, this is his greatest diss track by far.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
And number one, of course, the greatest boxing franchise of all time. Do you realize there is actually legitimate discussion as to whether or not Rocky Balboa, a fictional boxing character, should be in the Hall of Fame? Rocky IV, I think, was the best Rocky of them all. I know, I'll fight off you Rocky III people. I'll fight off you Rocky people, the originals. But Rocky IV was great. You know why? It's because they had the best heel that they've ever had in Rocky. You know how you get over your heels? You have them brutally murder Apollo Creed in the middle of the ring.
I was going to say, have them kill a black dude in the middle of the ring.
And the way they did it was so brilliant because you had this great grand entrance by Apollo Creed. Like me now watching, knowing what I know about storylines, I would have known something's up here because they're giving him this grand entrance. Living in America. He's got the song. He's got the dancers. His wife is in the crowd. And the man dies in the ring. He dies. I remember thinking, there's no way Rocky's going to be able to beat this guy. This is the last Rocky movie, and Rocky's going to go out losing. Nobody can beat him. And, of course, they had that dramatic fight where he came back and he beat Ivan Drago. Just a great, great story told when it comes to good versus evil. That's how you do it.
So you got Ali, you got The Fighter, and Rocky IV. That's a good list. I want to go back to Rocky IV, though, because to me, that is, you know, I'm one of those Rocky III guys, but Rocky IV is right up there with it. First of all, you got my two favorite scenes when Rocky's training, and he, you know, you got that juxtaposition between Drago using the science and Rocky running up the mountains and chopping logs and hearts on fire, strong desire. And then, you know, you got the after the fight when Drago looks up at fake Gorbachev and he's like, you know, forget you. I got to get this man his props for a good fight. And Rocky's like, if I could change and you could change, maybe everybody could change. And he was, you know, he still sounded like an idiot, just, you know, but that's the way some of us still sound. But what he was saying was real. And especially during that time, you know, coming off of the Cold War, I thought Rocky IV was a solid movie. Marcus, what do you think about Alfred's list?
Well, I can tell you because just to jump ahead here, number three on my list is actually Rocky IV. I can jump in on the Rocky IV love. But I have to admit something first. This is the only Rocky film that I've seen. And whenever we do the movie list, I realize that I haven't seen a lot of movies. And that includes Rockies 1, 2, 3, and 5, and Balboa. But I have seen Rocky IV, and I don't know why I watched Rocky IV and not the other ones. But the two things stood out to me. One was Apollo Creed's entrance. This guy in 1985 had a better ring walk than Hogan did at WrestleMania 3, which is impressive. I mean, Vince had to be jealous of the entrance this guy got in a movie. And then number two, you know, after, you know, Apollo dies, which was hokey, what a line. If he dies, he dies. I mean, come on. Like, that's such a heel line for especially he was ahead of his time in 85 to say that. But that's the only Rocky movie I've seen, and it's number three on my list. And we'll get further on my list, and you'll see that I haven't seen a lot of movies because I had to get creative. Number two on my list was Tyson. Okay. And it was the documentary that focused on this inside look of Mike Tyson. And we all assumed that Tyson was this ear-biting savage based on what he did in the ring. But, you know, what we learned in the documentary, that Tyson was this nice, gentle, sometimes confused guy who has this weird passion for pigeons. And it really opened up a new side of Tyson. And I have so much more respect for him now, not only as a fighter and the demons that he was battling in the ring, but as a human being. You know, this guy isn't as stupid as we thought he was. He's a pretty smart guy. And he's been trying to adjust to life after boxing and losing all his money. So it was a documentary that really stood out in my mind. So number two on my list is Tyson. Number one on my list is going to cause some controversy and some comments from Alfred probably.
Uh-oh.
The number one quote-unquote movie, and you said it could be anything, it's the montage from Mike Tyson Punch-Out when Little Mac is running with the black
truck. Wait a minute. So wait a minute. What?
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Disqualify this.
No. The montage for Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
When he's dressed in his pink outfit, his pink crushed velvet pink outfit, running behind the black trainer. That's a great movie.
That motivates me to
keep going. And it might be 10 seconds long, but it's boxing, you know.
It might be 10 seconds long, and it's on your list as greatest movie of all time, Mark.
Wow.
Greatest movie of all time.
How are you doing this with a straight face right now?
Yeah.
Easy. I watched it earlier today.
I got a question for you, Marcus. Did you like the sequel a little bit later on when the trainer told you to buy Nintendo Power Magazine?
And I used to subscribe to Nintendo Power Magazine. So rest in peace, Nintendo Power Magazine. That died. But I know it's controversial, but this really points out that I need to really step up my movies because there's a lot of movies that I haven't seen.
Your movie game is kind of... I remember when we had the baseball movie
question. Your
movie game is lacking.
Yeah, I know. But number one, wow. Punch Out. The montage. Shout out to Little Mac.
When he's running across the city with that background, and it's the same background over and over again.
Yep.
It's the pink outfit. That was a great game, though. I mean, that's a suspect answer, but that was a great game. But Tyson, getting back to Tyson, the rest of the movies on your list... Tyson, I think, you know, it was fascinating and, you know, kind of, especially after, you know, kind of going through what I've been going through the last month or so, you know, the human brain is so complex and interesting and, you know, somebody can have a lot of different facets and Mike Tyson is definitely one of those people. Rocky IV, I already said, you know, that's a great movie. But Alfred, getting back to the Mike Tyson Punch-Out.
Go ahead, Alfred. Get it out.
Come on, man.
Horrible. I think you need to be disqualified, Marcus. I'm sorry. I think we need to have a first to set the standards of these lists, and Marcus Vandenberg needs to be disqualified for his actions. This is negligence. This is gross negligence.
We'll leave it to the people.
We'll leave it to the people. You know, once the folks hear this, we'll post up a question. I don't know if you can make polls on Facebook.
I think we can.
We'll make a Facebook poll and see if your Mike Tyson's Punch-Out answer qualifies.
We'll post
the video. You thought the hate I got on Bleacher Report was bad?
Just you wait until they get done with you.
Boxing fans are way smarter than wrestling fans. Come on. Oh, it's a sweet science. Come on.
Hashtag shots fired.
I have the Florida Gators winning it all. I don't want to finish this thing at dead last.
Don't send this man a t-shirt, America. The man is asking for a t-shirt 5 minutes ago, and he turned his back on the Eagles. Hey, come on.
They may argue. They may disagree. They may not always see eye to eye. But through it all, they're still the kings of sport. Join the discussion at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
And we are back on the Kings of Sport. Happy holidays. Happy New Year, everybody. Nate and Marcus holding it down right now. And I don't know about you, Marcus, but to me, one of the best things of 2013 was the friends that we made on this podcast. We had a lot of great guests come through. Alfredo Torres, Bobby Fresh, Gary Washburn, Clipper Darrell,
Mark Spears.
Mark Spears, the great TJ McLean, John Pollock, Waiting.
Mike Oz from Yahoo Sports.
Yes, the Wizard of Oz.
Kevin Cricker, who let us all down.
Oh, Cricker, please.
Yeah. Hope you didn't bet black people, because he did not finish well at the Derby.
Yeah, don't always bet on black.
No.
We'll talk to you next year, Kevin. Hopefully, if you didn't hear what Marcus just said. You throw a lot of hate on this new year, Marcus. I just want to let people know.
You know what it is? It was a long day. I got off work like at 2:30 last night, and I had to wake up at 7 and drive back from Vegas. So, and when I got back from Vegas, I had to go to work. So it's been a long 24 hours.
Yeah, Grumpy Vanderberg, man. That's gonna be the new meme. Like Grumpy Cat took over 2013. Grumpy Vanderberg be 2014. Just a light-skinned dude with a frown crossing his arms. So, but one of my favorite things this year was our interviews. And like we just said, we had a lot of great guests on the show. But right now we're going to play clips from three of our best interviews of the year. And those were Bomani Jones, now of ESPN. Of course, you can see him on Around the Horn. And my favorite show, probably other than PTI in terms of sports shows, Dan Le Batard, Highly Questionable with Dan, Bomani, and Poppy. CC, a very three, very three. So we got Bomani Jones. We got Court Bauer coming up. And for those of you that aren't in the wrestling world, this was a great conversation, and it generated a lot of controversy. And because of that controversy, we're going to play the non-controversial parts, because I don't need a lawsuit to start out the new year. I'm sure Marcus doesn't either.
I don't either, because I have to go to an event that this company is hosting in 2 weeks, so I need this to come through.
Yeah, so we're going to play the non-controversial parts of the Court Bauer interview. And then finally, maybe my favorite interview of the year, because it was something that we had kind of generated out of a conversation.
We kind of joked about it at first.
Yeah, it was kind of a jokey thing in segment four, and then we got serious about it, and then we sent Alfred out, you know, on the trail, and he finally got the contact, and it was an interview that is still, to this date, one of our highest rated shows, one of our most downloaded shows, the Hollywood Simpson interview. You know, for those of you that hear us, you know, talk about Hollywood Simpson or I just don't know, boo. For those of you that hear us make those kind of comments during the process of the show, this is where it all began. We talked to Russell Hollywood Simpson about his relationship with Kerry Rhodes, his part in Kerry Rhodes kind of being blackballed from the NFL, and the fallout from that. And Alfred and I played kind of the Katie Kirk role, and Marcus plays Martin Bashir.
Someone had to do it.
Yeah, I think we had a good balance. It was a good balance. Like, we weren't all fluff. We weren't all hardball. It was a good balance. That's what this show is all about, Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
You said, and when somebody needs to bring
hardball, by the way.
Hey, I just don't know, boo. So sit back and enjoy these interviews. And this is the best of 2013. And I hope you guys like this. So let's go to the interviews of Bomani Jones, Court Bauer, and of course, the one and only Russell Hollywood Simpson.
So our guest this week, not only one of the coolest guys I know, but hands down the smartest in the industry. And if you know anything about journalists, you know that's nearly impossible to pull off, to be smart and cool. The host of The Evening Jones at TheEveningJones.com, Bomani Jones. Bomani, welcome to the Kings of Sports.
Yes. Hey, I appreciate you having me. And I will make this note, at least like on the college beach, like around here, I've got an incredible streak running up being the coolest student in the press room. Like, it is globetrotter-esque being the coolest dude in the press room. I'll take that one at the very least.
Thanks for joining us, man. Well, first off, let's talk some hoops. The big story over the weekend, of course, Kobe Bryant. Did Mike D'Antoni pretty much seal his fate the moment Kobe Bryant went down in the final minutes of the fourth quarter?
No, because it's not his fault. And I think everybody that I've read anything from or talked to that knows any, that actually knows something about injuries, has said it's not Mike D'Antoni's fault. Like, this is an unfortunate thing that happened, but after all these years, 17 years that Kobe Bryant has played, somebody's really going to tell me an extra 5 minutes a game for the last five or six games is what popped his Achilles tendon? I mean, it just doesn't add up. It's easy to come down on D'Antoni about this because it's just easy to come down on D'Antoni, but I just don't think for a second that this was his fault.
So you didn't think there was a Shanahan situation in terms of RG3 where you could see Kobe was clearly not right and never took him out?
I think the difference here with Kobe and Robert Griffin is that people don't hit Kobe. Right? Like, I think that's a big thing. Robert Griffin's back there on the Save Yourself program and with Shanahan, and that was nuts in observation. I had not watched enough of the games to see how Kobe had played or had moved at any point in that. Like, I just don't. I see what you're saying, though, on the comparison of it, but I don't think that this is – I just cannot say comfortably that this is on the foot of Mike D'Antoni. I can tell you this. Lakers ain't about to get him out here paying three coaches at one time. Like, to fire D'Antoni is for someone very important to not just pay three coaches, but then to acknowledge making a serious, serious mistake. And we just saw at Rutgers with that crazy Dave Rice situation. When people need to save face, it's amazing what they'll let slide.
Now, it's a devastating injury for sure, but the Lakers still have two very, very good bigs. They still got Steve Nash. Is there a silver lining here for the Lakers in terms of making the playoffs?
No, I don't think that. I can't say right now that they're going to be a better team. I can say, though, that I'm very interested, and I'll stay up tonight and watch this to see what kind of team they are. I mean, we saw some games earlier this year where they played without Kobe, and they are a different team. Now, Nash, I'm expecting, is not going to play in this game they play on Sunday night, so I imagine that he's not going to be, you know, facilitating the offense. And from there, you get stuck out there with Steve Blake. But what you are going to have is a different team. And I want to say it was the early part of the Warriors game. I'm not sure if people were watching, but everybody who thinks that Pau Gasol is just some dude in the NBA now should have watched that game. He's something. He and Dwight, I don't see any reason that people are so sure that you cannot exist with two players who can play in the low post. I think both of them can, because both of them can do things at the high post that make them not useless when they're away from the basket.
Now, Bo, I want to talk some masses with you, but first to follow up on that, do you think that this last week or so is going to be a referendum on Dwight Howard and his legacy going forward as a Laker?
His legacy, man. He's been there 1 year. Like, what legacy is this that we are talking about? Dwight Howard came back, and look, he's got his issues as it relates to his maturity, though I think he figured some stuff out at the All-Star game. And I said this on television at the All-Star game. I was like, look, he tried to do all that stuff to please the crowd, and nobody was feeling it. At an All-Star game where he was voted a starter, like, there was any sign right there that he had to take it to a different place. He got it right there. And it looks like, in large measure, he has. We haven't had any of these immature Dwight moments, at least that I can recall, since the All-Star break. But it's not going to be a referendum on the course of two games, man. I mean, is he still leading the league in rebounding, coming back from this back injury? I feel like we're not giving him enough credit for the things that he does because of what people have noticed that he does not do. But Gasol can score in the post, right? You've got somebody you could go to get baskets, and I think that Gasol will be much more assertive without Kobe because I just don't think Kobe has the best effect on him. It's kind of daunting playing with Kobe Bryant for some people, and the Gasol we see in the Olympics is never present when we see him next to Kobe Bryant. I think Gasol will be fine, and I think that Gasol will relish the chance to get the ball without Kobe being there, and I think that Dwight can produce enough. But look, if they don't make the playoffs, they've got two games left. We're talking about a two-game sample. It can't be a referendum.
True, true. Now let's go from the hardwood to the perfectly manicured greens of Augusta. The Masters went down this weekend, and early on the show we talked about the many controversies surrounding Tiger Woods. And, you know, on Saturday you had a lot of people, including current and former golfers, calling for Tiger to withdraw. And as I stated earlier, Tiger is not about that life. You know, we know a lot of things about Tiger Woods, but being a quitter and being a self-snitcher isn't among them. So what did you think about the controversy? And also, kind of in general, what did you think about the weekend and Adam Scott's victory?
Well, to be fair to him, he did kind of accidentally tell on himself. I mean, we have to give him the self-snitch award. I don't know what exactly he was thinking or how he thought that was going to slide. It was all so peculiar the way it went down. But anybody, the whole idea of these people who were so adamant that Tiger needed to turn himself in, I just had all kinds of questions about how they felt about Tiger Woods. Like, that's just what you couldn't help but go back to, because that's ridiculous. I don't care how much golf is supposed to be based on this gentleman's game and honor and da-da-da and everybody else and everybody talking this noise. Look, man, I play golf with people. They be out here cheating all the time. I got a buddy that was on the internet, on Twitter, going hard, super-duper moralistic about this. He cheats at golf all the time. I have watched him cheat at golf. He cheats. He was cheating at golf playing with me, and I stink. Like, there wasn't even any competition in this. But out here on this, Tiger needs to go home. That's ridiculous. Ain't nobody going to do that. Look, they made a ruling. He adhered to it. They did not say that he signed an incorrect scorecard in the manner that would require disqualification. I ain't going home. If I already flew all the way out here to Augusta, Georgia, of all places, you think I'm about to go home?
We'll get you out of here on this question. What's next for you? I know a lot of folks are wondering what your next move might be, and I know you're in the middle of your staycation/vacation. So what's next for you? What can fans expect?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not doing any work in the month of April because I don't feel like doing any more work in the month of April, and I, at this current time, only work jobs that pay me by the appearance, so it's not like I got to take vacation time. I'm just taking a month off. And I'm going to go see Prince in Las Vegas at the end of the month. I'm going to go do a talk down in North Carolina A&T on Tuesday to their economics club and talk to them about how I use economics, which my degrees happen to be in, and this line of work that I do. And I'm going to post up and chill out. And then I guess either on May 1, because that's a Wednesday, though, so maybe the week after, I'll be back to work doing something. We'll figure it out. You know, it's just I don't have a contract with anything right now, but I suppose it won't be before too long that I, like, will get a real job. I mean, there's only been so long that you can sit on television, that a television show that in part, like, assumes your legitimacy based on your day job. You can't sit up there for so long without a damn day job and expect to appear to be legitimate.
True. Well, Bo, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this one final question while we had you here. One of the reasons why I started the podcast was because of the lack of variety, I guess, in terms of the blogosphere and the podcast world. And I know some of our Caucasian brothers out there might not want to hear this, but it's been my experience that this medium is pretty monochromatic, you know, for lack of a better word. But, you know, there are hundreds of podcasts and blogs written from that white fan's perspective and that white journalist perspective. But I seem to see a lack of minority views, whether that be black, whether that be Latino, whether that be female, whether that be gay. So where do you think, why do you think there are so few prominent or recognized minority voices in the world of sports journalism, particularly when we're talking about the blogs and the podcasts?
Well, I mean, there's no real simple answer to that question. I mean, like, I worked at SB Nation and they gave me carte blanche and they let me do whatever I wanted, and I had a fantastic time working there, but there wasn't a whole lot of other black people there, right? And that was a place that had a fantastically talented staff. Like, I think in 10 years we'll look back at the people that worked at SB Nation at that time and it would be a kind of a where are they now sort of thing. Like, there's so many people that were there, but you're right, the diversity wasn't quite there. And that's a group of people that I don't think is like outwardly discriminating or whatever it is, right? Like I just don't think that about them. And I, from knowing those people, and I'm not one that's going to lie about it because I'm cool with them. Like, I just don't think that's what it is. I have a lot of there's a lot of questions about how people decide that they're interested in doing this, how you get jobs. Like, there's no simple answer that you can quite get. I always say, though, that there's a danger in new media, which is we've got this decision about what the voice of the fan's going to be, and you look at these blogs and where the references tend to be centered around, and it's kind of like you got the white guys writing for the white guys, and you get in the comments, and just get in the comments section anywhere in media generally, but like in new media, you get in the comments section, and you see who the audience for a lot of that stuff happens to be, and you see that we've got a bizarre racial situation and dynamic going on with all things media, all things internet, right? Why more people aren't there? It's just no one. I mean, I'm trying my best to give something that's a bit more cogent. I wrote something, I guess, about 2 years ago about this topic. The one thing I will say, though, that I think is very important is that to be successful, especially in blogosphere and podcast stuff, you've got to be able to put forth a distinct voice, but you also have to be able to put forth a distinct voice that is also accessible. And the difference in new media stuff between the things that are really like that really catch on and the things that are just good and only a few people know about it is their accessibility. You got to put stuff out there that gives enough ways for enough people to get into what you're doing to where it can grow. You can't be narrow in the focus on the things that you write about, the things that you podcast about, or what your perspective happens to be. Like you're not going to get anywhere doing a podcast if the motto of the podcast is from the white perspective. You're not going to get anywhere if the motto of the podcast is from the black perspective. That's not what's going to work. Whatever perspective people are coming from, they got to have a way to get into what you're doing. And that's something, no matter who you are, if you're creating content, you got to find the lanes or find the beat that allows as many people as possible to catch on. Like when I do radio stuff in particular, I do stuff that focuses a lot on people's jobs because everybody has a job and office politics are exactly the same everywhere. They don't change. Office politics are the same pretty much no matter where you go. As soon as you determine the leverage of either party, office politics are going to be the same. If you can talk about things in the context of people's jobs, everybody will be on it because everybody's been through it. But you got to find that thing that makes what you do accessible. And that really is for everybody in new media, because there are a lot of people who are doing writing that has an absolute ceiling because it simply isn't accessible.
That is good stuff, brother. That is real talk. But we appreciate you taking some time out to talk to us. Let the people know a little bit about the Evening Jones and how they can follow your work before we let you go.
All right, buddy. Evening Jones, I do a live chat show, 7:30 Eastern time at theeveningjones.com. I get on camera. I'll take your questions for an hour. We can take your video questions. We can take your questions written out. It's a pretty entertaining hour. At least it is for me. I hope it is for somebody else. So check us out there. Check me at BomaniJones.com. We do like a calendar of scheduled appearances and all that stuff. Of course, there are no appearances until May, but you can go check there anyway. Sign up for the email list and all of that stuff. And I am on Twitter and I guess Instagram for those who find it to be relevant, because who knows? Why would I not want more dudes clicking like on these pictures of me in my suits? You can follow me on Twitter or the Instagram at Bomani_Jones.
All right, again, thank you again, brother. Great conversation, and you got an open invitation if you ever want to come back and talk to the Kings.
Hey, man, greatly appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, bro. All right.
Yo, this is The Rock kicking it with the refugee camp, and you're about to smell what The Rock is cooking.
Yo, this is strictly a club record dedicated to anybody who's stand outside in the cold.
And we're back on the Kings of Sport. You know how we do it each and every week. We like to bring you an interview with fresh voices and fresh topics. And this is a topic that has been much anticipated. We've been talking about it for a few weeks now. Twitter beef is real, y'all. Brother Alfred Kunawa got into a Twitter discussion with our guest today. And, you know, he's gracious enough to come on so we can talk about that and a lot of other stuff, because he's a very interesting, very fascinating guy who's had a very wide-ranging career. So, Brother Alfred, if you don't mind, introduce our guest to the folks out there.
I'm glad you said Twitter discussion, Nate. Very, very nice wording. Because this next guest worked with the worldwide leader in sports entertainment as one of the top writers for the WWE. He worked closely with the McMahons and WWE's nonstop creative team until leaving the WWE 24/7 bubble for greener pastures. He is now the host of Major League Wrestling Podcast, which features former WCW wrestler Conan, which... like podcasts in general, not just wrestling podcasts. This is a must listen. This man has also earned my respect personally because, again, like Nate said, he and I had a disagreement on Twitter, and I invited him to come on the show, on this show, and he agreed. He obliged to a cordial gentleman's debate. And so without further ado, I give you writer, producer, and brand developer, Court Bauer. How you doing, man?
Hey, man. What's going on, guys? I'm on enemy territory here. I just got to... always watch out what's coming from the side. You got, it's a 3-on-1 advantage here, so I got to...
Indiana Pacers tonight.
Yeah.
I was going to say like the Shield, but the Pacers works.
Yeah. It's the same. It's been the same thing the last, you know, game or so, man. It was pretty rough on Saturday night.
Yeah, well, let's get into it, okay? Because
yes.
Basically our discussion was about The Rock. And
yes.
I read that Court Bauer, he felt that maybe in a few years the WWE would regret their relationship with The Rock for one reason or another. I disagreed, you know, using points about the WWE's business with The Rock. But, Court, go ahead and expound on your opinion on the WWE's 3-year relationship with The Rock.
Yeah, I should also just put it out there that it was based on a conversation I had with a gentleman from WrestlingInc.com. We did a podcast, and then someone took that podcast and took, like, two words and then kind of recap based off of those words. So things were kind of disjointed in the discussion, but that was one of the things that was put out there. You know, looking back, they might not really be feeling what they did with the Rock. And to kind of go into a little bit more detail on that, from my perspective, you know, should WWE and Dwayne Johnson have partnered? Absolutely. You'd be stupid. I mean, just it's – I don't. You know, WWE has the financial resources and the ability to take on risk like The Rock, and I mean the downside is minimal. You're gonna lose some money. The upside is you can make a ton of money, and obviously WWE made good money on WrestleMania. But did WWE and The Rock maximize their potential for success starting from when MSG, the Survivor Series with MSG with Mick Foley and The Rock teaming up, and even that build all the way to WrestleMania 29, and you look at a lot of the ways you measure success in the business, and I'd say it wasn't a home run, but it was a double. And if you could do a do-over, I think you'd have to consider, if you look back and you have some regrets. Of course, I think you'd have some regrets. There could have been a lot of ways to do this. And to me, you know, to quantify and define success as one night of historic business is limiting the investment one makes in a guy like The Rock, who transcends everything and anything you do, because he is a guy that can get over, you know, a third string announcer like Kevin Kelly. Or a guy like Hurricane Helms, who was kind of, you know, just a WCW guy that had a cute gimmick, and then literally does a match with him and gets him over one night, and Helms is made for the rest of his career and is a great talent, and he just needed that spotlight shined on him. And Rock didn't really rub up against a lot of guys. He was very isolated backstage, you know, talking to guys like Goldust. He was like, I didn't even know he was at the Royal Rumble. And, you know, that's kind of crazy. I mean, he obviously knew he was there, he just didn't see him. But, you know, you look at guys like Antonio Cesaro. Imagine if he had an opportunity just backstage, just two ships passing in the night, and Rock just gives him that funny nickname, and then all the baby faces can get on Cesaro, and he's relevant, and he's in the mix. Or even a guy like Kofi Kingston, or instead of doing a debate with a bunch of old haggard legends, what we all love, it was just a weird application to use them. What if John Cena captain a team, whether it's a tag team or a six-man or just one wrestler that he championed and he cornered versus The Rock one night on a Raw, and it leads to, you know, some sort of physicality. Both those guys are putting over younger stars. They're coaching them. They're the whole night, 2 hours, 3 hours are building to that moment. I mean, those are just a few off-the-cuff ways you could have used them just to kind of spread the love and spread the wealth and get a return on that investment. But I also look at the other metrics. You know, ratings dip down. They were kind of erratic from Royal Rumble to WrestleMania just this year alone. The buzz after Rumble dipped a bit. You know, people were just, you know, whether it was good for business or not, people were into CM Punk and Rock, and they just were really upset and passionate after that. And WWE kind of lost some steam because they didn't really capitalize on that momentum, and they went a different direction. And you just never felt that road to WrestleMania really reached that crescendo that it usually does. It was pretty strong, but it wasn't what I thought it would be. And the booking, you know, you had a change in creative that obviously is a factor in that. But I don't believe, and I will go on with this, but one other thing I'll just throw in there before I tag out is that I don't believe John Cena is any more over because of this run and than he was prior to it. And I'd say that, if, as Rock has said publicly, was the mission to endorse Cena, was that even successful? I don't know if there's anything gained from that that, you know, validates him in the eyes of the fans that like Rock and didn't like Cena.
Fine. You can talk about ratings. You can talk about merchandise. This isn't Forever 21, okay? WWE's not trying to sell T-shirts. I know they want to have their overall business flourish under The Rock. But the bottom line is box office. We all remember the number that WWE puts out there with the 93,000 people at WrestleMania 3. Nobody remembers how many T-shirts were sold on that night, okay? Nobody remembers what Saturday night's main event did leading up to that. One of the reasons I think the ratings were so down was because The Rock is destination programming. They built WrestleMania 28 for a year. They said, we're going to get John Cena versus The Rock for a year. We already knew what the event was, so there really wasn't as much onus to tune into Raw and see how this was built up. Everybody knew to be there, and they tune in record numbers. Maybe this year, WWE had their expectations too high to where WrestleMania did do over 1 million buys, did do the 1.3, but can you blame WWE for investing so much and getting their hopes so high for a guy on The Rock who pretty much bleeds $100 million everywhere he goes? I think this is a great business decision, and at the end of the day, we're going to look back at all the records that were broken with The Rock in the fold.
Oh, well, here's my thing. WWE looks at not just one-night box office in terms of ticket sales, in terms of pay-per-view. They look at the long run. They look at, okay, if Rock is there, Royal Rumble, Elimination Chamber, WrestleMania, Extreme Rules, whatever it's going to be, okay, well, we have to budget each show to include him, to include production, arena, rental, everything. They lost money just about on Elimination Chamber. Royal Rumble was down. Survivor Series, when he came back in whatever it was, 2009, 2010, was down. And then you talk about WrestleMania. If you adjust WrestleMania 29 based on the net of what they earned versus the investment of bringing in Brock Lesnar and running MetLife and running and with The Rock, it's not like Rock and was the same crew. They actually brought in someone that was a huge heavy that takes a big chunk out of that box office. And the numbers weren't as good as they initially had projected. They were great, but you have to remember, think about it like this. They're about, say, almost within the same range as last year. And Rock is wrestling. Yet with Brock Lesnar on that show, with Undertaker, with Triple H, okay? And the numbers are down. You know, just in total, you would have people hungry for more Rock, but I don't think they were at the end of this run. I don't think fans were amped up to see another match with The Rock versus Cena. I mean, if they had done something like Brock versus Rock, okay, that's next level stuff, but they didn't. And in the end, I think it's really on WWE for not providing a good roadmap to maximize what you could out of The Rock. I mean, I just feel like I'm a perfectionist, so I'm going to look at this and say, God damn, there's a million things I would have done across the board, merchandise, building this on Raws, whether, you know, like I said, having Cena champion one team versus The Rock's team, and just I think it would have done better business for ratings going into WrestleMania. But that being said, you know, I don't think this is a situation where, you know, they're going to not do business in the future, and maybe they'll do even better business in the future because people will be ready for it, and you'll have a little bit of a pause in between you know, this phase and the next phase of The Rock's run in WWE. I mean, there's plenty of fresh matches by then. You don't know where guys like Dolph will be. You don't know where guys like Cesaro will be, or The Shield, which would be really interesting, seeing The Shield and The Rock mix it up, or, you know, Bray Wyatt's group, which I don't know if you've seen, guys, but I think that's one of the more provocative and fascinating, and just in terms of just setting the state, setting the table for a new act. I mean, this to me is lights out. I haven't seen anything like this in a million years.
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
Well, great points made there. See, guys, pretty cordial, right? That was pretty cordial.
That was cordial. I mean, you lost, but it was cordial.
Yeah, you tapping out.
I don't know about that. We'll talk to the nation.
ain't for everybody. Welcome to Hollywood, baby.
Take a picture.
Coming with.
Let's not even talk about it.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
And we are back on the Kings of Sport. The podcast is changing the game one show at a time. And, you know, we always like to keep you up to date on the latest news and information in the world of sports and entertainment. And this week is no different. We've got another great guest for you. And it's a guest we've been talking about on this program for a while now. Brother Alfred, if you don't mind, why don't you let the people know we're chatting with today?
Well, this next guest is a lightning rod that has been brought up numerous times on our show, like Brother Nate just said, so I figured it was only fitting that we invite him as a guest. He gained notoriety for allegedly outing NFL safety Kerry Rhodes as a homosexual when steamy videos and photos were leaked of the two online. He's no stranger to controversy, and he is here to set the record straight, maybe break a little news. Ladies and gentlemen, and of course, unicorns, it is Hollywood Simpson! What do you like that? How you doing, Hollywood?
Hey, how are you guys?
Doing all right, doing all right.
Doing great, great to have you on. Now, let's just start off the top. Recent breaking news. Darren Young, I'm not sure if you're privy to this, WWE superstar, just outed himself as gay. So really, right now, he is the most significant gay athlete in sports right now, and it is widely speculated that there will be a homosexual storyline in WWE based on his real-life sexuality. Are you comfortable with that as a homosexual man?
I'm definitely comfortable with that. If, you know, that's what he wanted to do, I definitely think it should be done. Yes, for sure. I'm definitely comfortable. I think that's great.
Now, with Darren Young, guys like that, of course, Jason Collins is another athlete who's openly gay as an NBA athlete, still looking for a team. Have you reached out to Jason Collins at all following him coming out of the closet?
I definitely have not reached out to Jason. We know some of the same people, but no, I haven't talked to them. No, I haven't.
Now, Hollywood, I think, you know, there's a lot of different opinions about the story with you and Kerry Rhodes. And I guess we kind of want to start at the beginning. You know, first of all, how did you and Kerry meet, and how did your relationship move from one of a professional relationship to a personal relationship?
You talking about Kerry Rhodes? Is he still living?
Yeah.
But,
wow.
Yeah. I met Kerry about almost 2 years ago now, and we got to know each other. At first, it was no relationship. We were just cool. I did not know he was gay. However, my antennas sort of kind of did go up because I was with two beautiful young ladies, and he looked past them, and he walked right to me to introduce himself. So I knew from that point that he seen something in me that he liked. We got to know each other, and we eventually started talking and started dating and also started living together. So we were a couple.
And that was before you were his assistant?
That was before I was his assistant, and just to, you know, clear that, I was never really his assistant. What I done was run his team, meaning run his staff on the people that worked in his house, and I was actually over his assistant. So I was over the people that was working for him. I was not his assistant. I ran things.
Okay, okay.
So I guess when did the relationship turn sour?
Maybe like a month, you know, within me working for him, he made the first move, and it went from there. We never did tell people we were together. Of course, people assumed that we were. It was never any girls around. I was the only girl around. He didn't have any girls working for him. All guys worked for him, and I was over everyone. You know, people started to talk. People on his football team were talking, you know, are they together? Of course, they knew that we were together. They never did disrespect us. I spoke to them. I spoke to them at camp. I was cool with them. We all went to the W and different things like that. And it was just a relationship between us, you know, like a man and a woman.
And I guess my question is, like, why did you feel the need to put this information out there and sort of out him like that?
I definitely did not out him. Let me clear that. Kerry outed himself. He was the first person that said something about it. TMZ reached out to him. I think he was in L.A., and they had heard the news. And I hadn't even said nothing at this point. And Kerry's response to TMZ was, I am as straight as an arm. Okay, TMZ contacted me. That's when I said, well, an arm has an elbow. And it just sort of kind of went from there.
Are there other football players you think that have similar relationships with men that are now worried because of the way this relationship with you and Terry went sour and how you and how everything was exposed?
I'm sure it's out there somewhere. I'm sure it's out there somewhere. And, you know, like I said, I did not out Kerry. If Kerry had, you know, hadn't ever said anything, you and I wouldn't be on the phone today. That's not who I am. I'm not a cutthroat person like that. You know, we were really cool. Like I said, I don't have a problem with him today. I have a problem with him not telling the truth, trying to make me out of a liar. Because you guys seen the pictures. What guy picks up another guy? What guy holds another guy's hand? You know, my thing is this. You know, if he has four legs and is barking, you don't need to say, oh, my gosh, there go a dog. You know it's a damn dog. It is just really stupid to me. You know, there is videos out there when Kerry talk about how much he care about me. I'm sure that you guys seen that. I'm sure that you guys have seen the pictures of me and Kerry hugging, talking, and leaning on each other. I mean, what more do you need, a flick? It's stupid to me.
Now, the piece of the puzzle I need filled in was, when did the disconnect occur between you and Kerry Rose? Was it a direct result of these photos surfacing online, or was there falling out beforehand? What happened that caused you two, who seemed very close, to break up?
We were very close. We were. And it happened before the photos. It was just actually something that happened in the relationship. I guess he started getting out. People started questioning him. And it really started irritating me. And I know, you know, me, I want to surround myself with people that love and care for me and that can be who they are. That was just a situation I didn't need to be in. It was a very toxic situation, and I got out of it. Because me being there 20 more minutes, it wouldn't have been good for either. And, you know, after we stopped talking, then maybe like a month after, the pictures started leaking. If I mind you, a lot of people had their hands on these pictures, people that were taking the pictures that we did not know about. The same thing with the video that's out with me and Kerry. We were actually working on a reality show together. And the person that had, I guess, the video sort of kind of leaked it, maybe got some money from it or whatever. The pictures definitely did not come from me. If I wanted to put out pictures, oh, I could.
Interesting.
And those are not it.
And now, see, that leads me to my next question, yo. I think, you know, everybody is now aware, especially the people that listen to this show, you know, who Russell Hollywood Simpson is and you know, like we said, the controversy and everything going on swirling around you. But what I want to know is, what's next? You know, what is next for you? Is it going to be some type of media venture, reality show, something of that nature? What's next for Hollywood Simpson?
I can say this. I'm working on a lot of things. I have met with a lot of networks about doing a show. And I have been in contact with the best celebrities. So many different celebrities have reached out to me, you know, since this, straight and gay, guys and girls. And I have a lot of things coming up, working on a few things with a lot of celebrities. So it should be fun.
And now, is there any particular celebrity who has reached out to you? Maybe somebody with their own network that has reached out to you that you would like to expose?
I really can't say. I really can't say.
Well, okay.
Someone with their own network has reached out to me.
Somebody with their own, as an OWN network, reached out with you.
Oh, my gosh.
That's how you spell own.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Could you answer, like, yes or no? Like, if I was to speculate, somebody along the lines of Oprah Winfrey, if Oprah Winfrey reached out to you,
Harpo,
interested in that?
You know, you know. So I don't know. I don't think so. No, I don't know.
Last question for me. Any regrets about anything that happened between you and Kerry?
No, you know, I feel bad for Kerry. And if anything, I could help him. If anything, because before now, people didn't know who he was. Let's stop playing. You know, if you went into a room with guys and you said, oh, Kerry Rose had a good game, they'd be like, who the hell are you talking about? I mean, so if anything, I could help him. So I'm not mad at him today. And like I said, if he was to walk into the room, I could say hello because they cost me nothing. If he was to call me, I would definitely answer and say, have you found the team yet?
And the answer is no, and he probably won't find a team at this rate. So
I don't know. Maybe. You never know. Boo.
True.
We've always said the Kings of Sport was the best podcast around, but now the reviews are in, and the people have spoken. here's what you had to say about the show. This is a sports podcast for the people, by the people. There are no old guys talking about the good old days. These are brothers that are connected to what's going on now. They bring you the latest information as well as comparing current events to historical ones. If there is one sports podcast that you need to listen to, make it this one. This is a very good show with three brilliant co-hosts who keep it real. Younger guys with great minds for sports. They have differing opinions and back it up with facts and figures. Always entertaining and an enjoyable listen. I am down with the Kings. The Kings of Sport is the best thing going on the internet. These guys rock. Give them a listen. You won't be disappointed. So there you have it. But you don't have to take their word for it. Find out for yourself. Listen to the Kings of Sport and make up your own mind. We guarantee we're the best show around.
We are back on the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop on this best of 2013 edition of the podcast. Nate and Marcus holding things down for you. And Marcus, I think if anything we've learned this year, we had a lot of great lists, we had a lot of great interviews, we had a lot of great discussions about sports. But I think our most popular segment by far has been segment four.
Hands down, and I'm not sure why that is. Is it the ratchetness or just the,
yes, people love ratchetness.
Well, yeah.
I mean, this year and 2013 was a great year for ratchetness. We got probably about three or four clips we're gonna play from the year, but I would be remiss if I didn't send some shout outs for 2013 in terms of our Ratchetness Hall of Fame. Shout out to the mayor of Toronto, Rob Ford, for providing us with cracky tales and inappropriate comments about Cunnilingus.
Yes.
Big up to Rob Ford. Shout out to Kanye West. Just when you think you got the questions, Marcus, you ain't got the answers, man. You don't have the answers, Marcus. I've been doing this more than you. Shout out to Kanye West. Like, for real, we would. I actually thought about putting some Kanye stuff in this segment. But really, if you go back for the past month and just listen to segment four, it's all Kanye pretty much.
Yeah, it's all pretty recent.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, from Jimmy Kimmel to the interview on the Breakfast Club to the interview with Sway, yeah, to his concert that didn't sell out in Kansas City. Yeah. So I don't know if it was a good year for Kanye.
Well, let's see. He had a daughter. He got engaged.
It's Chris Humphrey's daughter.
His album was... No, his album was well received by the media. It only got two nominations, two Grammy nominations, but...
I was laughing about his daughter, in air quotes, that people can't see at home.
It's his daughter. Come on.
Come on, man. That baby came out with a jump shot.
It's his daughter. Then it's definitely not Chris Humphries. It's Kanye's.
It's Lamar Odom's baby. we're never having Kardashians on this show.
That's fine.
I would like to talk to Bruce Jenner, though.
I wouldn't.
Are you serious? Like, I would love to talk to Bruce Jenner and be like I think I would be the Bruce Jenner in our interview with Bruce Jenner, as you were the interviewee in the Hollywood Simpsons interview, because I would just go hard on Bruce Jenner. I'd be like, come on, Bruce. You was like the golden boy. You was like the greatest white man in 76?
72, I believe.
He was the greatest white man alive in 1972, and now you is involved in this ratchetness. And you got a facelift that makes you look like Dame Edna. What's going on, baby? Yeah, I would be the hater in that interview. But
76, I'm sorry, you're right.
I was.
I think 72 was Russia.
Yeah, we boycotted.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, I just pulled 76 out of my head. Like, I did some quick drunk math because, full disclosure, I'm drinking eggnog and rum right now. So I just, like, was like, Brooks is kind of old. He wasn't in the 80s because that was Carl Lewis's time. So it had to be like the 70s. I say 76? And I was right. So go with your first instinct, people. And that's a lesson for 2014. But yeah, segment four was a great segment. Again, we had people like Rob Ford, people like Kanye West, people like Paula Deen. Let's not forget Paula. We had probably my favorite story of the year that is not going to be on this show because it was an episode where you were absent, Marcus. The Trey Meteora story.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. My man was... Trey Meteora sure knew how to stimulate headlines. We talked about Grambling and the player revolt. We talked about the All Players United movement. It was like, I love segment four. Like, to me, that's... I think if anything, like, I love everything about this show, but I think segment four is kind of like, if you were to say, what is the Kings of Sport, it'd probably be segment four.
Yeah, that's accurate.
You know, it's sports, it's pop culture, it's music, it's our opinions, our slant on the world. So right now, we are going to give you the best of segment four. And I know you had this talking, you know, listen to this podcast saying, hey, what is the best of segment four? Well, I'm going to tell you. First of all, we're going to kick it off with the leadoff man from the Atlanta Braves from the 90s, Otis Nixon, because you know we got to get some cracky tails in on this show. We're going to talk about the Ask Drea fiasco from Marcus's former employer. And we're going to talk about one of the Kings hopping behind the bar at a Las Vegas establishment. And I think Marcus has an update on that particular story.
I do have an update. So as I mentioned earlier in the show, I was in Las Vegas for UFC 168, and I was coming back from dinner on Friday night from Mandalay Bay walking through the Luxor, and my girlfriend, who's listened to every show,
yay, looks, shout out to Marcus Booth,
looks to the right and says, hey, isn't that the bar that Alfred... hopped over, and I looked up, and I was like, oh, shit, it's Jabbar.
I love that is a, like, our show is a reference point in your relationship.
Yeah. So this bar is right attached to the Jabberwocky's theater, and at the time it was busy. It was probably 9 o'clock at night, so it was still busy, but the best part is... we did a count. We counted 5 security cameras that are hanging from underneath the bar. So this means they got Alfred on tape.
Yeah.
Why they didn't go after him, who knows? But he's on tape. So Alfred, when you get back, the Luxor buddy might want to stay out, dog. They might be watching you.
Maybe the Jabberwockies listened to the show and they knew he was going to Africa, so they wanted to let him get his trip in first.
Yeah.
Now, once he gets back, that's when the affidavit comes out.
Yeah, because I mean, unless everyone was asleep at the wheel, there's no way they didn't see what was going on. So, good luck, Alfred. 5 cameras.
Yeah.
So, and the bar is not that big. The bar is probably, maybe 20 feet wide. I mean, it's a pretty small bar for a Vegas casino, so... yeah.
Yeah. So you folks out there, listen to the best of segment four for the year 2013 while Marcus and I look for prospective new co-hosts. Marcus, you tweet TJ and I'll call Dennis Black and Asian.
Will do.
All right, cool.
Don't try to antagonize me because you know what? It's not safe for you in this zoo.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
So let's go from one brother that didn't quite come in first in the race to somebody that is losing the race of life right now. That is one Otis Nixon. Marcus, what's going on with my brother Otis? One of my heroes from those Braves of the 90s.
Yeah, well, your hero fell off the wagon big time, boy. He was arrested. He was caught with a crack pipe. And he tried to put the blame on his son, which is even more.
He tried to
pass the blame on his son.
Oh, Otis.
And you need to Google his mugshot. People talk about black don't crack. Nah, buddy. When you smoke crack, you crack, buddy. Because Otis is 54 and he looked 75. Like
Otis though was when he was playing, when he was like 25, he looked 54.
Yeah, he looked old then. He looked like Richard Williams. The Serena explains that.
No Jerry Crow, at least. He's got a short haircut going, but...
Now, Marcus, didn't they find crack rocks in his seat?
They did.
Now, the portion of that he tried to pass off on his son, like he said, some of this is my son, you know, is that what he tried to do?
Yeah. No shame in his history.
Was his son arrested?
I don't believe his son was in the car at the time. I believe it was...
So, okay, let me get this straight.
Let me pull up the story. I don't want to intimidate Mr. Nixon here and his...
If you're trying to break down Otis's alibi, he happened to get in the car after his son was driving, didn't notice the crack cocaine residue, and when he was pulled over, he's like, oh, this ain't my crack. My son must have had it when he was driving the car before.
I love what he says. He's planning on getting rid of it. If you got crack in your car, you might want to get around to that sooner than later.
He was looking for the gas station with the vacuum that you pay 75 cents for?
Yeah.
Otis. Come on, man. Like, this hurts my heart as a longtime Braves fan. Last week we had good memories of Dion with Must Be the Money, and this week it's bad memories of bad present with Otis.
So here's the TMZ story, by the way. So according to the report, Nixon told the sheriff's deputy that the substance they found in his car was indeed crack cocaine, but he said the pipes and drugs belonged to his son and that he had been planning to get rid of the pipe. So he was being a good father trying to get rid of the drug evidence, and he got popped.
Oh, how far did he have to drive to get rid of the drug evidence? Like, did he drop his son off at the corner and then drove to Walmart so he could get rid of this and recycle it?
He's trying to probably sell it.
This don't add up. This don't add up, Otis. Why?
Poor guy.
Check out, go to his website. I believe it's otisnixon.com, but like the first thing on the page is like him talking about he's living this drug-free, alcohol-free life, and it might be time for a website change, an update.
Oh, he was. Otis.
The Ministry of Otis Nixon.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Wow. Well, you know, everybody make mistakes, but Otis, come on, man. You can't fall back like that and blame it on your son. But so hopefully...
here's what he's talking about. My life today is Christ-centered, free from the past experiences and storms of drugs and alcohol, trials and tests of keeping it real. My testimony speaks for itself. Keeping it real.
Christ-centered and crack-centered kind of sounds similar.
Yeah, it's an easy change in in HTML.
Christ is Betty Ford.
I hope Otis can get himself back together because, you know, like I said, he was one of my favorite players. Dude was so scrappy, defensive player, stole base stealer. So hopefully Otis can get it right, man.
That's why he was so fast. That's why he stole those bases. He was like, some crack.
One other unrelated drug thing. Did you see the Lauryn Hill story today?
Uh-oh.
No, what's going on with Lauryn?
So Lauryn Hill was sentenced to 3 months behind bars for tax evading and tax fraud. But 3 months, Wesley Snipes got how many years in jail for the same
thing? At least 2 years.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Oh, he's got those lawyers.
Yeah. See, isn't she still married to Bob Marley's son?
I believe so. I know they have a gang of kids, so they can kiss mommy goodbye. And she, of course, she was playing the slave card. How she was a slave to the industry, and now she's being, you know, locked away for taxes.
How is she a slave to the industry? She ain't had a record out in like 10 years.
She's still living off the
Fuji money.
No,
the miseducation.
Yeah,
I don't feel bad for Lauren. I feel bad for Prize. Prize is the one I feel bad for. Prize ain't had a hit since Electric Avenue. Remember that remix of Electric Avenue he did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the last song. I think it was some movie soundtrack, but that's the last song I remember Prize having.
Poor Prize.
Yeah. welcome back to the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop for another week, but not before we get to the always entertaining second four, often imitated, but never ever duplicated. And, fellas, we have one of the most ridiculous stories in the history of second four to kick it off this week. And, Brother Marcus, being as how you're always good at setting these stories up, and also as someone who has connections to one of the corporations that might be talked about in this next story, why don't you go ahead and let the people know what we're going to talk about?
Sounds good. So last week on 105th and Park, yes, it's still on TV, video model slash reality star Drea Michelle appeared on 105th and Park, and as they tend to do at BT, they'd like to really dominate the social scene during their show. So they had a hashtag going for Ask Drea, where they wanted users to ask questions to Drea Michelle. Shout out to my man JP over there, who probably set this thing up at BT. And it backfired on him. So, you know, Black Twitter is notorious for ripping people. And especially when it comes to someone who has quite the past that is not the best for a mother, you would say. She was arrested back in 2007 after she had abandoned her kid, her 7-year-old kid. She would leave this poor 7-year-old just for days at times, and while she was working in Philadelphia. And, you know, that's all it took for Black Twitter to really get on her case. So you guys have some of the tweets, yeah, right, that were sent in to the BET account. Yeah, so to Drea's personal Twitter account.
These tweets, man. Black Twitter is ruthless. Our friend Bomani Jones made a tweet, sent out a tweet that night. He's like, Black Twitter is ruthless. It is a Ruth-free zone. Ain't no Ruth to be found whatsoever on Twitter tonight. So with that being said, Brother Alfred, let's get into this ratchetness.
From Harvey Williams, is it true Halle Berry spent more time with her son in Losing Isaiah than you did with yours? From Mr. T33Z, was you there for your son's birth? From Kareem Akbar, on a scale of Ray Charles to Helen Keller, ooh, how often do you see your son? From Royal T, what district was your son from in the Hunger Games? And finally, from I Hacked Fox News, Drea's son. I want to see you, Mommy. Drea, follow me on Instagram.
Oh, and it just keeps getting worse. I'm going to kick it off with one of my favorite ones from Coriega. If you had to save your son or a bottle of Ciroc, what type of Ciroc would you most likely save? From Coney, did you tell your son to watch 106 and Park today so he can finally see you for the first time? From Alexander Howard, how much do you charge your son for an appearance in his life? Who? I can't find the person that sent this, but because it's been retweeted like a million times, but does your son flavor his ramen noodles with his tears? And I think the one that kind of encapsulated this whole terrible, 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 brilliantly wonderful idea from BET was somebody on Twitter that said the tweet, what would you do if your son was at home, crying at home on the bedroom floor because he's hungry?
Now we should say her son is now 12-13 years old, so you know it's bad on two levels. One, he's at that stage where he's now dealing with stuff like this, and two, his mom is Drea Michelle, and if you haven't seen her work, look her up. That's gotta be awkward and confusing to go home to that, you know, at that, especially that age when you're developing certain things and your mom is half naked on the internet. So
It's not all bad for Drea, though. Somebody came out and defended her today, one Miss Jackie Christie. So, I mean, she got Jackie in the corner.
That's not who you want to, in your corner. But she did have a comment after her appearance on 106 and Park. And she said, quote, I'm starting to think they don't really hate me. They're admirers, she said. They really just love me. I don't deal with them. I just let them hate on their own. Mm. She's delusional.
Mm. I mean, Brother Alfred, you deal with hate on a daily basis. Do you feel some sympathy for your girl, Drea?
Did we lose Alfred?
Uh-oh. Is Alfred there? Or is did he have to go babysit Drea's son tonight? Oh, Alfred.
We lost Alfred.
I think we did. Huh.
Maybe he got offended by all the hate. He thought he took it personal. He was like, hey, I was once Dre and Michelle too.
Can you guys hear me?
Oh, yeah, yeah, we can hear you.
Well, I was talking the whole time. I didn't know that you guys lost me. I don't know what happened here.
I don't know. Oh, no. I thought Drea called you to come watch after her son. She's got a club appearance tonight.
I was. He's actually with me. I told him to be quiet. He's being a good boy right now. But yeah, no. Listen, it's an entirely different brand of hate. No, I don't feel any sympathy towards Drea. BET, I'm with Marcus in that maybe there's a conspiracy and some sabotage going on. They should have known better than to do something like that and think people were going to take this seriously. So she gets what she deserves in this situation.
I can't leave Vegas.
Any stories?
Maybe you can get it out of me.
It's 1 o'clock in the morning. Come on, what more do we need to do?
Are we in late night mode?
We are.
I don't want to incriminate myself, so I may or may not have been at the Luxor Hotel. And they have this Jabberwockies bar. You guys know the Jabberwockies, that dance band that's from America's...
They got their own bar? Group.
Yeah. They have their own bar, their own theater. Show. Yeah, yeah. I hear it's really good.
It's
I
a love good show, Jabberwockies. Actually.
Yeah, and so it's called the Jabbar. You get it? You know, the Jabberwockies bar, Jabbar. Mm-hmm. And
they have to pay Kareem for some of that?
I don't know. They should. But, you know, the bar is the bar part is italicized. So maybe that's a trademark type stylistic thing to where they can get away with it. But I don't know if they forgot to close the bar. I don't know if this is how they usually run their stuff. But it was completely open. And we were there, or we might have been there at like 4 o'clock in the morning. We were coming back. Completely open. Tap was completely open. You can go to any bar from Bud Light to... Which, like you're saying, and they have these large cups, and we may or may not have indulged at the end of the night.
So nobody was working the bar at this point?
Nobody was there. There was not one single person.
So you hopped over the bar and filled up your own cup?
I may or may not have done that, yeah. Wow. Cup, plural, you know, cups. They have them like that. I mean, I'm talking back and forth. Maybe they had somebody there, but they were wearing a mask, and they couldn't really see through it.
Is it too early to start looking for a new co-host, Marcus?
Mind you,
he did something this might go sideways.
City. He did this in the city. It probably has the most security cameras out of anywhere in the country. So they probably saw your black ass doing this.
How are they going to get me? How are they going to do? They don't know. They can't come over and touch this. And I'm saying that I may or may not have. I didn't say I did it. I said that I may or I may not have gone over there and indulged.
How many times?
I lost count.
If
I was to put a number on it, and it was pretty late, it was pretty hazy, I don't really remember specifics from that portion, but I did it enough times to where I gambled a lot of money, a lot more than I should have, on roulette. I mean, I put a whole lot of money on black, and it ended up going in my favor, but that could have been a nightmare.
So you hopped the bar, filled up your cups for free, allegedly. And you thinking that with all these security cameras, like Marcus mentioned, you're gonna be safe in case this might go to some judicial proceedings. And as we've seen in the last month or so, sometimes the law does not take the most favorable outcomes when it comes to a black defendants, or not even defendants, but black litigants in the case.
You guys actually think they're going to track me down and find me?
There was a shooting last night in Vegas, right next door at the Excalibur, so maybe they're looking for you.
Why is it that every time I leave somewhere, because I was at the Luxor, and that's right next to the Excalibur, mm-hmm. and then last week I was in Venice, and as I was leaving both these places, there was some kind of shooting. I think maybe they found me doing these things, and they're trying to get me.
Stamford, Connecticut.
They're coming for you.
We almost got you.
God damn it.
Next week, Big Nasty.
We puzzle for
it. So, on Sunday, when we go to SummerSlam, we should watch out when we step outside. Cause,
Marcus, I'll be walking like in front of you or you know behind you, wherever you can guard a bullet. You know, you can take a couple shots, right? Yeah, a couple shots to the chest won't hurt.
Nah, you're supposed to be the diesel of this operation. I'm supposed to be Shawn Michaels. You know, you're the muscle of this operation.
I don't know about that. I'll need some bulletproof vests.
Getting back to the Jabberwockies bar, though, that's got to be the most annoying bar ever. Because you asking a bartender for a drink, maybe some Hennessy, maybe some Coronas. I don't know what your drink of choice is. Whatever your drink of choice is, you're like, hey, can I get two? And then the bartender come up in the mask and the black hoodie. He's like, they ain't saying nothing. They just dancing. You like, does that mean it's a double? Or you don't know what to tip them? It seems like a very convoluted establishment.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind?
Should That's it. 2013. In the books. It was a great year. Honestly, Marcus, I think, this is probably one of the most fun and interesting and complex projects I've ever been involved in. And, we've only been around since March, and I look forward to seeing, where we're going in the future.
Yeah, it's been a great 41 shows now. This thing sort of developed online through social media and also through live audio wrestling. In a way, that's how I became familiar with you.
Shout out to John and Way.
You were calling him to the law. I was like, hey, he's black. He likes wrestling. that's how it sort of developed, and it's been a great ride so far. And I'm looking forward to another 52 shows if you stay on schedule next year, and we'll see how it goes. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit, and I do want to take some time out to send some thanks, some shout-outs, if you will. First of all, I want to shout-out sponsors. Shout-out to Audible.com, who has been with us for, I think, since September. Shout-out to Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Check out your free 30-day trial and your free audiobook. Give them some love because they show love to us. Audible's down with the Kings. Get down with audible.com. I want to send a shout out to our brothers over at Place to Be Nation. And folks, if you haven't checked out this site, you got to, because if you're a sports fan, a wrestling fan, a pop culture fan, video game fan, whatever, you got to check this site out because they've got some great things going on. They've got the Place to Be podcast, which is guaranteed tremendous. I'll be on that show in the new year, about a week or so from now, on their Best Of show. They got our buddy TJ McLean. They got the Kings of Sport. It's just a great show. If you're, like I said, if you're a fan of wrestling, sports, pop culture, go to placetobenation.com and get down with them. And finally, I want to send a shout out to everybody listening. All of you listening right now in podcast land. Yeah, you. You, yeah, the guy sitting on the couch with his iPod on, eating cheesy bread. You, thank you, brother, for downloading this show and listening to what we've had to talk about for the past 41 episodes. It's been really cool, and I look forward to the future. And we wouldn't be anywhere without you guys. And, whether you're in America, Canada, Africa, South America, all over the world, we appreciate you listening to the show. Before we kind of give you guys a sneak preview of next year, let's finish up the show by giving our best moment of the year. Marcus, what was your favorite moment or moments of this year at the Kings of Sport?
Favorite moments on the show? I really do think the segment you just heard with Alfred and Jabbar was one of them.
Young man mistakes.
I think one of the, it's not the best moment. It wasn't a happy moment, but one of the most important moments was when you decided to tell folks about the issues you're going through in your personal life.
Yeah, I didn't know you were going to go there.
Don't get all emotional now. Come on.
Yeah, I know, right? How you going to try to? See, you started off all grumpy, now you're getting all sensitive at the end, Marcus. you're hot and you're cold, brother. But yeah, that I think we were talking earlier, like show number 7. Yeah, you owe it to yourself to kind of go back and check that show out. Not only did it have the Kevin Krieger interview and the athlete song piece that we played earlier, but it also had you know, me kind of being real and honest and open and talking about some of the stuff that I've gone through since I returned from Canada. And that to me, like I think like you're saying, I don't know if it's one of the best shows, but I think it was one of the most important because it actually spoke to something. And I think that show kind of gave us the freedom in future shows to just kind of, you know, be real with it. And, you know, it allowed me certainly, you know, to be more free and not kind of be a persona or, you know, somebody that people would think I was. But it's like, you know what? I'm going to have fun. I like these guys. These are my boys. I wouldn't have them on the show if I didn't respect their opinions. And not only their opinions, but the way that they presented. And we had fun with it. And then for me, my favorite moment, I think, again, you know, this is why I like this show. Because we all, the three of us, Marcus, Alfred, and myself, have a different kind of worldview or a different perspective on sports than your typical show. But within that worldview that we all share, there's three very different strains. Marcus comes from a certain perspective. Alfred comes from Bizarro Land. And I come from my own perspective. And, you know, it just works. And so, you know, I dig the chemistry and I hope it comes through on the show because we have a lot of fun making these podcasts. But my favorite moment outside of the Hollywood Simpson interview, which you heard earlier, was probably, you know, and this is something that's kind of personal to me, was when we talked to Bobby Fresh, because he was a guy that I always listened to on the radio and I respected and, you know, it was a contemporary of mine. And I was like, you know, I like this dude. He gets sports. He gets pop culture. He gets broadcasting. And, you know, not to sound corny, but, you know, I wanted to be Bobby Fresh when I grew up. And it was really cool to have Bobby not only be the first guest on a show that none of us will ever hear because for some reason it got deleted, but he was our test show. And then he came back and was on show 25, I believe, to talk about the World Series or Major League Baseball at the All-Star break because we talked about Puig.
Yes.
For Bob to come back and do the show, and, you know, he's somebody that did Bob's Boneyard and Dork Trek and a bunch of other shows. Somebody I respect in the podcasting game, but also I respect, you know, as a man. It was really cool. And, you know, that to me, Hollywood Simpson, Bobby Fresh, and Bomani Jones. Because, you know, I'm a fan of Bo. And it's like, you know what? If this show doesn't extend and exceed to greater heights, past where we are now, which is a great level, I can say, you know what, man, I talked to Bomani Jones and we had a cool 40-minute conversation and people dug it. So, you know, as a broadcaster, I appreciate that. So those would be my highlights of the year for the Kings of Sport. But 2013 may be in the rearview mirror, but look out, man, Eden cheesy bread on his couch, because 2014 is right ahead and we've got some great things in store for you guys and listen to Kings of Sport. We're not going to stop doing what we do because we know that that's what you want, that's what you need, and we're going to give it to you. We got some great guests in store for you next year. We're going to, you know, fine tune the show a little bit, kick out the stuff that didn't work so well, bring in some more stuff that does work, continue with the ratchetness of segment 4, and generally just, you know, be who we are. And I think who we are is one of the most entertaining shows on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, wherever you're getting this from. And, you know, I say that without any ego or whatever. Like, I'll put our show up against anybody. So that's what I'm looking forward to next year, Marcus. What are you looking forward to?
Personally, it's going to be a busy travel year for me off the top, between some work stuff I'm involved in, and also some vacation I have lined up, including a trip to Disney World in February and then trip to WrestleMania in April.
Down in New Orleans.
Down in New Orleans. I have my tickets for WrestleMania and the day after Raw. So I'm hoping for a better experience than WrestleMania 29 this year, because WrestleMania was not good. It was my first time going, but I mean, when the Raw the night after is better than WrestleMania 29, that's not a good sign.
Will you be going with Brother Al?
I don't know if he has a ticket yet. I bought a ticket for my girlfriend. She's going with me. But I'm not sure if he's going.
You took your girl to WrestleMania?
I took her this year.
Oh, Lily. Go ahead and play her. Does she know who Hulk Hogan is?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh.
Okay, so she knew Hogan. Does she know who Sting is?
Probably not, because I don't think... She did watch wrestling briefly as a kid, but I don't think it was WCW. It was the Federation, so... she probably doesn't know Sting. Probably TNA. It's probably just Hogan, and Hogan's on the company anymore. I don't know who else is still lingering. But WWE, she could probably name me more. Oh, she's been on Total Divas, too, so she could name me tons of wrestlers now.
So she knows about Vincent.
First names, real names, kayfabe names. She'd probably
Jimmy and Johnny and Jay Uso.
Yeah, Vincent, Vinny. She'd tell you all about those, the Total Diva people. Yeah, so.
So yeah, we need to get your girl on the show for February.
We can work something out.
Like, do you know, that's probably been my one regret of the year. We have not had a female guest.
Yeah, that's on the show yet. It's not a good look.
And TJ McClune, I know you're listening, baby. I know you're listening out there in Texas, my brother. You can't come back on the show until we get a female guest, because we can't have a dude on three times before we have a woman.
Or change your name to Tanisha, and then we can have you on. If you're willing to make that life change, if you really bought this show, TJ.
See, now I had this bad image in my head of TJ in a cowboy hat and a dress.
Oh.
But he's got like the tan, but it's not like a good tan. It's like, you remember Thomas C. Howell and Soul Man?
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Thomas C. Howell Soul Man tan. It's like, hey, I'm Tanisha McClune. This is how we go in the year, Marcus.
Oh, yeah, so plugging, I was supposed to plug.
Yeah, you still didn't finish what you were plugging.
Yeah, I was going through my travel schedule. So, yeah,
remind me off air, though, to write that down so we can meet up, because that'll be cool. Because for those of you that listen to the show each and every week, I have never met Marcus and or Alfred in real life.
And I have met Alfred twice now.
And once Alfred got left outside of the party.
We should have put that on the show. Damn, we have too much stuff.
By God, Big Nasty, you got left out of the party. But if you want to hear that story, go back and listen to our SummerSlam episode.
Yeah. Speaking of traveling and wrestling, I should hopefully have some interviews for you during our next show, which will probably be January 10th or so.
Okay, we heard on the SummerSlam episode that we just mentioned, we had interviews with CM Punk, Triple H, John Cena, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. So we expected some big people, Marcus.
Maybe some similar people. But there's one person in particular that I would love to get, who I know will be at this event, that if this happens...
I think I know who you're talking about.
If this happens, I can cross him off the short list of people who I've been interviewing in the world.
Is he from parts unknown?
No, he's not. No, I
don't. He is. Yes.
Let's no, no.
Marcus Vandenberg, you bring your plane into my solar system, and I will destroy your planets with the Big Bang Theory.
I'd rather interview Ahmed Johnson than interview the Warrior.
I was gonna say something, but I'm not, man. It's New Year's. It's Kwanzaa, Harambe.
I took Swahili. That doesn't sound right.
Harambe. It means something in
Swahili.
In Kwanzaa language.
Yeah, Swahili.
Oh, let's end the show, Marcus.
So yeah, next show next week, the return of Alfred.
Yep, Alvin will be back and start a new year. And, like, this is the crazy thing about the show. Like, we're 41 shows in, still haven't made it a full year yet. We'll have our big – we got a lot of stuff to look forward to in 2014. We got our big year anniversary coming up in March around the NCAA tournament time. We've got
– let's figure that date out. Continue talking.
We got some great interviews coming up, and we've got a super top secret double quiet project that may occur in Los Angeles in the springtime that we'll tell you about if it comes to fruition. So just know that the Kings are working hard, and we appreciate your support and your loyalty to the show, and we're going to keep giving you some good stuff. So that's where we're going to end off 2013 with Marcus being grumpy. Again, it's been a fun year. It's been great. This has been something I've wanted to do for a while, and it's pretty cool to do it, and not only to do it, but to do it with people that I enjoy talking to each and every week. So Marcus, let the people know where they can write you and follow your work and find your itinerary for when you're making your world United States tour.
You can follow
me. Makes sense, but hey.
Yeah, he's close enough. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
And you can follow me on the internet on Twitter. And the number 8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. You can follow Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham. Send him some well wishes as he makes the trek back from the motherland to America, where federal agents from Jabbar will be waiting for him. Put something on his commissary at This Is Nasty on Twitter. Follow him on Bleacher Report and check out the articles and the videos and all that good stuff. And you can find all of us on Twitter at CosPod, KOS_POD, Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport, and iTunes, Stitcher, all that good stuff. You know where to find us. If you're listening to this, you know where to find us.
One last travel comment. If we have any listeners in Indianapolis, please let me know what is there to do. I've been once before, but I have to made 2 trips there in the span of 6 weeks. So I'm looking for entertainment. If you're a listener, you want to hang out. If you're not crazy, if you shower, we can hang out.
I got a homeboy that lives out there, Chauncey. I don't know if he listens to the show, but yeah, I went to school with Chauncey. He's out there in Indianapolis. He's doing it big out there, and yeah, he finds ways to be entertained in Indianapolis.
Okay,
what do you call it? Naptown.
Naptown.
Yeah. So, on that note, I'm going to take a nap. This eggnog is getting to a brother. Marcus is going to do what Marcus do out there in L.A.
Sleep.
And Alfred is going to enjoy the fruits of the motherland and all those exotic yams out there in Africa. So, thank everybody. Thank you all for listening to the Kings of Sport podcast in 2013. Have a happy and safe new year. Don't get in any trouble. Don't get in any foolishness. Don't end up in segment 4 because we will talk about you. But be safe. Have a good time. Happy New Year. Happy Kwanzaa, KME. And we will talk to you in 2014. So for Marcus Grumpy Vanderberg, hashtag Team Lightskin, for Big Nasty Alfred Cunningham, I am the
hashtag guy. Hashtag Team Purple.
Damn, you just throwing shots. This is how Marcus in 2013. He just throws shots on the way out.
Yeah, well, he can't defend himself.
It's cold-blooded. Cold-blooded! Yeah, insert the Rick James cold-blooded clip right there. Cold-blooded! For Marcus, for Alfred, I'm the Godfather, Nate Milton. Thank you for listening. Happy New Year, everybody. Because you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD.
or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's bad. D-A-double-D-Y, thanks, thanks. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.